Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again.
Unbelievable.
Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake.
A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe it myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Welcome back to episode 238 of the Last Round Podcast. Thank you again for joining us. Jumping right back into it, fight reviews this past Saturday, the 1st of July, from the Sheffield Arena in Sheffield, England, on DAZN. Dalton Smith remains undefeated with the 7th round TKO over Sam Maxwell, who takes the 2nd loss of his career. This was for the British and Commonwealth super lightweight titles. I'm sure we talked about it on the shows in the past, but there's really no equivalent in the United States to the British and Commonwealth titles, huh? Like the as you're elevating into the rankings, and there really should be, you know, there really should be, because over there in England and all that stuff, you guys have, that's a good system, I feel, to go through the rankings and stuff. So, but anyways, what do you think about Dalton Smith's 7th round TKO?
I thought it was a good performance, you know, better than his previous performances. I thought he started well. You know, he got his victory, which now gives him the British super lightweight title for keeps. He's done his three defenses, so that's now his to keep. So good performance from him. I thought he was going to beat, you know, Sam Maxwell. I think it was just a step too far, to be honest, really, for Sam Maxwell. I think he's more of a British, European type level, where I think, you know, Dalton Smith is going to be on the rise to bigger and better things. And at the minute, he can kind of take his time and he can do that. He can do the, you know, English, British, Commonwealth, European, then go for some international titles, just because the super lightweight division is kind of a loggerhead, right? It's a traffic jam at the top, you know. All the titles are, you know, over with Devin Haney at the minute. So, you know, he's really got nowhere else to go. So he can kind of bide his time, you know, slowly work on things, get better and better until he manages to get himself up near the top, and probably going to have to force himself a title shot, I would imagine, later down the line, or just wait for them to disperse, you know, if Haney decides to move up.
Is that how it works? You said that you have to defend the British title 3 times and then you get to keep it. So if you defend it once or twice and you lose it, you give it to the next person. Is that how it works?
Yeah, it's an old-fashioned rule. It used to be 5 defenses back in the day, if I remember correctly. And then, obviously, you know, with times changing and stuff like that, and people not fighting as much, they actually lowered it to 3. So you're supposed to do that to, you know, to keep the title. But I'm sure there's many people that probably bought a replica or something like that to keep, because they didn't want to, you know, maybe defend it 3 times and kind of, you know, stagnate their career a little bit. But yeah, Dalton Smith's done 3 pretty quickly and got himself in the history books.
When you win a world title, even if you just win it once, usually the sanctioning body lets you keep one, right? Like, you can win it and then lose it in your next fight, but you're still always going to have that one title, right?
Yeah, normally you win it, I'll walk out the ring with your title and then I'll come and give it back to you. And then the WBA or whoever will send you one in those cool looking suitcases that you always see on Instagram, and you open it up and there's your title with your name on and the date and time of when you won it. Like, you know, me, Shepard versus you.
That's pretty cool though. Yeah. I mean, like, that's pretty cool that a lot of these sanctioning bodies do it like that. You know, 'cause I mean, that's investing into time and money into putting it in a case like that. And, you know, engraved with the date of the fight, when you won it, what the location city was. And, you know, I think that's always been a pretty cool perk. But yeah, but it's interesting though, for the British title, that you said that you have to defend it 3 times and then you get to keep it. So that's, imagine doing it, you defend it twice and then, or you defend it the 3rd time and you lose and you're just like, damn, if I would have just won, I would have got to keep it. That's ridiculous. But then, so this is a super lightweight fight between Dalton Smith and Sam Maxwell. So, like you said, Smith's defended it 3 times now. So does that mean that he's ready for next level, or what are we thinking? Like, who would be somebody, if you could play matchmaker here for somebody like Dalton Smith? Yeah, he's had 15 fights, 15-0, but he's had the British title a couple times. He's defended it multiple times now. Ideally, in the super lightweight division, which is 140. No, 135, I'm sorry. Who would you, fantasy booking here, who would you put him in the ring next, if you could pick but let's just say by the end of the year?
I think at the minute, from listening to what he said afterwards, you're looking at him, you know, he's probably going to go the European route slowly but surely. But if you're looking for more of a name for someone for him to get in there with, you've got like Lewis Ritson would be a good, you know, British fight for him. Harlem Eubank, Darragh Foley, who's obviously, you know, had a couple of fights with Matchroom now. He would be another good one. Probably a little bit too soon, but someone like a Liam Paro, who is also with Matchroom, the Australian fighter, that would be a good one. And obviously, we have a little bit of rivalry in the UK with...
He was the one who was supposed to fight Regis Prograis, right?
Yeah, correct. Yeah, I mean, he's obviously a lot further ahead at the minute. But, you know, for the future, like in the next year or two, Liam Paro, I could see that. Australia against England, it would be a good matchup because obviously we play rugby against them, soccer against them, football, cricket, stuff like that. So to, you know, to have that as a fight is obviously something that we can get behind as well. So that would be a good fight in the future. O'Hara Davis, another name.
Yeah.
For the future, because obviously he's mandatory for the WBA, which is Rolly Romero. So, you know, there's no chance he's going to turn around and fight somebody as low down the ranks as Dalton Smith. But, you know, if we're looking a year, two, maybe even 3 years from now, those are some, you know, good fights that should be easy to make as well.
Moving on, also this past weekend from the Manchester Arena in Manchester on ESPN Plus, the Plus, for the undisputed super middleweight titles of the world, Savannah Marshall gets the majority decision win over Franchon Cruz de Zern, who takes the second loss of her career and loses her undisputed super middleweight titles. I think you picked Marshall. I think we might have both picked. I think I know you for sure picked Marshall last week. And I believe we touched on how Cruz de Zern has a pretty decent chin. So you didn't think that it was going to be a knockout, even though Marshall's has knockout power. But I think you did call a decision. You might have said unanimous decision, but you called a decision. What'd you think about the fight?
Awful.
Yeah, I've heard that before.
Awful, awful fight. Cruz de Zern, do you know who she reminds me of? She's a female Derek Chisora.
Oh, you know what? I could see that.
She is. She's I could see that. Big, rough, strong, rugged brawler. 1-2, overhand right.
Hey, but Chisora's made a lot of money just from that style, man.
Yeah, you know, and Cruz de Zern has had a career which far outlies her technique. She's absolutely awful. Absolutely awful. To say she's a world champ. See, this is what I'm talking about before on the show, right?
Tell us.
This should not be a headline fight. It was absolutely awful. And the fight afterwards that we're going to chat about in a minute, Natasha Jonas against Candy Wyatt, how on earth that was for the IBF welterweight title? See, this takes away from people like Carisha Shields to have like Candy Wyatt in a IBF fight. She was absolutely atrocious. How she was in a world title fight is beyond me. But going back to this, it seems like Savannah Marshall could have made really easy work of this if she'd have just boxed. But Franchon Cruz de Zern managed to kind of drag her into more of like a brawling type fight, and Savannah just couldn't get out of that. She should have just kept it long, just boxed her, moved, very amateur style, but she just couldn't do it. And I don't know whether she kept kind of like crouching down, and I don't know if that was because de Zern's obviously kind of well known to just do like a 1-2, huge overhand right. So I don't know if it's because she wanted to be a little bit lower to kind of keep out of those dangerous overhand rights that would come flying over. But in a perfect world, she would have kept herself tall, kept herself long, and just boxed her and just moved, boxed. And I thought that's something that, you know, Peter Fury would have done because that's kind of like his style. But yeah, she got dragged into it. So it's kind of a really bad performance from Savannah Marshall. I thought she should have done a lot better than that. But yeah, Franchon Cruz, I just don't know how she... It just shows that the women's boxing shouldn't be pushed because that was awful. Both fights were absolutely atrocious. And that's why, you know, there's not enough good fighters in and around. And that's why people just keep moving up. Natasha Maslin keeps just moving up in weight to get different titles. She's now had two weight world champion now, because she just moved up, because her natural weight, she couldn't win one because of Katie Taylor. So she just kept moving up to win them, because there's literally like five or six fighters. Some of these people that are fighting for world titles, they're not even full-time boxers.
That's insane.
Like nurses and police people and, you know, stay-at-home mums and stuff like that. So it's not a good look. I know they keep pushing it on us, but it's not ready. It's not ready. They should be on undercards and stuff like that. And only the big fights should be televised. Because if this is your first impression of women's boxing, you'd be like, this is absolutely awful. And you wouldn't want to watch it again, right? So that's why they shouldn't push it. That's why they shouldn't have done this. I don't understand why. And this card in general was absolutely atrocious. If that was an Eddie Hearn card, all the fans would have gone mental. But Ben Chalom, because he's new and what have you, and probably doesn't do as much media, like, they kind of just let it slide under the rug. But yeah, they keep pushing these women's fights on Boxer, and they're not good enough. It's not ready yet. Just let it cook on the back burner in a couple of years, when we get a few more from the Olympics or a few more women actually turning pro, and then show it to us. Because you don't get hardly any knockouts. You don't get any knockdowns, hardly. No blood, no guts. You know, all the gladiatorial stuff that we watch, you don't get it.
Right. No, yeah, I agree. I mean, what do you, like, you said, let's just put on the big fights. But what big fights are there? Like, put the big fights as the main events. I mean, it's not like we have a supply of them.
We would have got the
Taylor Serrano rematch. I mean,
yeah, and even in that, there was no knockdowns, no knockouts.
Right, right. Yeah. I mean, it was the event in general, the atmosphere of that event being at Madison Square Garden, and Jake Paul being involved. Even Eddie Hearn said it. He's like, if Jake Paul wouldn't have got involved, in this fight, especially being on Serrano's side, he's like, this fight never would have been made. Like, he pretty much said, like, yeah, his fame and his reach that he has pushed this fight over the edge to what they wanted. You know, we were able to do it and, you know, make some type of an event out of it. But, you know, just like, if Jake Paul never got involved, we never probably would have saw that fight, or at least anytime soon, or if we did, it would have been maybe as a co-main event or something. But yeah, it's tough, man. Like you said, the talent pool is just, it's never really been there. You know, it's just sucks.
There, and there's no jeopardy in the fights. It's like, once somebody's got into a rhythm, you can tell. You're like, okay, Clarissa Shields has won this, because there's no Deontay Wilder, there's no power, there's no, like, Deontay Wilder fighting Luis Ortiz, he's getting outboxed, but you're kind of like on the edge of your seat. You're like, at any minute now, Deontay Wilder is going to unload, he's going to knock him out. And then what was it, the 10th round, 11th round or whatever, when he fought Ortiz, he did that. Or like, remember when Jose Zepeda fought Ivan Baranchuk and they both went down like three or four times?
But during the pandemic, yeah.
Yeah, you don't get it. You don't even get hardly any knockouts. The only time you get like KOs or TKOs is when you've got like Natasha Jonas fighting Candy Wyatt, and Candy White was just absolutely awful and shouldn't have even been in the ring with her. There was such a gap in talent. And then we got a stoppage. That's the only time we get stoppages. Like Bumgarden and Mayer. No knockdowns, no knockouts. You know?
Do you think that, you know, we touched on, because Clarissa Shields was at this fight, and then I know in the post-fight press conference, I think they interviewed her after the fight, and then she was also at the post-fight press conference where she kind of went back and forth with Savannah Marshall, and, you know, they're eventually going to fight again. They are, because there's the talent pool isn't deep, so they will fight again. But do you think it's, even though somebody like Shields doesn't knock, she doesn't have the knockout power either, but her talent, her skill level is still, in comparison to everybody else she's fought, is still ridiculously higher than anybody else. Like, you know, like when, she, even when she fought Marshall, who people, even you thought, like, Marshall, no, Marshall's going to knock her out or something, you know. Shields did her thing, and she fought her really well, even though there was no knockouts and knockdowns. Do you think Clarissa Shields being in the game now, ever since she came in out of the Olympics, because, I mean, she went to the Olympics, you know, regardless of the talent pool or not, you know, she did it the hard way in a sense. Do you think her being so good, regardless if there's knockouts or knockdowns or there's not, do you think that, because if you compare it to the rest of the talent pool, especially in and around her weight class, it's kind of difficult. Like, oh, well, you know, pound for pound best fighter in the world is Shields by a mile, you know? Does it hurt female boxing? And it's not her fault.
How could I put it? I don't think it hurts it, but it would be better if she was a little bit more of a salesperson. Like if she was a Ronda Rousey. Like when Ronda Rousey did it in the women's UFC, everyone was drawn to her and everyone wanted to watch it because she was just smoking people in like 30 seconds, 40 seconds, a minute. You know, people weren't getting out of the first round. Now, if Clarissa Shields was doing that, or if anybody was doing that, people.
I mean, but to be fair, MMA is a little bit different.
No, it is. It is. But like, if we had like anybody, Clarissa Shields, if she was just smoking girls, like they're not getting out of like the first round, she's doing like a balanga to everybody. Everyone's like, dude, you want to see this girl? She's
unbelievable. No, yeah, you're right. Especially the casual fans, people would be like, oh, I want to see a knockout.
Because she's good, but she doesn't have that kind of. She doesn't have that style like a Lomachenko or a Shakur Stevenson where you're kind of like, this is probably going to go all around, but they're that stylish, they're that good to watch, you still want to watch it. You know, she doesn't have that sort of style. She does not, you know, she's not kind of, you're not glued to the TV when she's on there, unfortunately. And that's what they need. They need a boxer like, I don't know, like a Caroline Dubois. Like she seems to have power. Like if she comes up and she's winning world titles, just knocking people out, then, you know, more people might be drawn to it. But you still need, like, a group of, you know, female fighters at every single weight category. Because, you know, when you're moving up to, like, super middleweight and there's, like, legitimately, like, only 6 fighters on something like that on BoxRec or 20 fighters on BoxRec, and some of those have only had, like, 1 fight, it's not good for the sport because everyone's getting a world title. It's like Oprah Winfrey, you have a title, you have a title, you have a world title. Like, everyone's picking them up. And it's watering it down. Because if you look at like Katie Taylor and Felicia Shields, right? Olympians, world titles. And then you've got Franchoise Kruijtszoon, she's a singer. She's a world champion. Everybody Bridges is a world champion. She was a bodybuilder and a ring card girl.
And a teacher.
Yeah. And a math teacher. You know, it's kind of watering down. Like Hannah Rankin. Hannah Rankin was a musician who took it up for fitness. She's been a world champion. It's watering down. It's taken away from Katie Taylor. It's taken away from.
Isn't there a porn star? Isn't there a porn star in England too that she's been on the influencer cards?
Oh yeah. She's not a world champion. Yeah.
But I mean, she's Ellen, getting into it too, Ellen and she's Brooke, doing fights.
Yeah, like Ellen Brooke or something. I think she's called.
Yeah. So right. I mean, it is what it is. But even the men influencer boxing is coming and like. They're getting a lot of money to do these fights and, you know, it is what it is, man. Eventually as time goes by, there will be that one or maybe 2 fighters or somebody, female fighters in general, that will capture somebody's attention. They will. I mean, you know, as time progresses,
I just somebody, worry that somebody we'll will that do we'll it. I worry that we'll lose them to the UFC.
No, you're right. Yeah. I mean, look at Shields try to go to PFL. She might still have a deal with him. Who knows? But it's tough, man. It's tough. You know, the talent pool isn't there. And, you know, you can only fight the same fighters so many times. You know, you're going to be like, oh, I retired 40-0, but you face the same opponents 37 times or something, you know, like. Yeah, it is what it is. In the co-main event, you touched on it a little bit. Natasha Jonas gets the 8th round TKO over Candy Wyatt. This was for the IBF welterweight world title. And also this past weekend from the Huntington Center in Toledo, Ohio. On ESPN, Jared Anderson remains undefeated with, would you say, his toughest victory so far up until this point against Prince Charles Martin, the former IBF heavyweight champion of the world. Anderson won by scores of 99-90 twice and 99-91. And then Anderson in his locker room after was seen to be emotional. I'm not exactly sure what it was for. It might be out there, but he seemed like he was really emotional. Maybe it was a tough fight. It was a tougher fight. I mean, he fought a guy who was, you know, a little bit more experienced. And, you know, Martin, even though he lost the title to AJ, it's kind of like sold to AJ. You know, Martin still can show that he can fight. And maybe Anderson, it just took a lot of out of Anderson emotionally, even though he won on the cards. Maybe he just kind of like, he put a lot of energy into it that he just had to, you know, let it all out after the fight. What'd you think?
It was a strange one because, you know, I think everybody going into the fight thought that John Anderson was going to make, you know, fairly easy work of Charles Martin. But, yeah, I mean, Charles Martin was obviously, I think, better than we expected. And at the same time, Jared Anderson did show that he's still a work in progress because, you know, anybody that watched it, you know, they were pointing out that he kept going back in straight lines. And Charles Martin, you know, had caught onto that and would just kind of like dive in and would catch him every now and again, you know, coming back with like a jab or a, you know, or a straight. And, you know, Jared Anderson got the decision over 10 rounds. I thought the scorecards were maybe a little bit wider than, you know, I thought. But, yeah, he's definitely a work in progress. I still think, you know, he's super young, especially for a heavyweight. So there's no need to, you know, kind of like really push him forward going now. But, yeah, it was kind of, because I remember saying last week, I watched that Top Rank video that they put out where he was with Roy Jones Jr. And he was kind of talking about like all the stress of providing for the family. And like he nearly burst into tears then. And then, you know, afterwards, after the fight, all the emotion, you know, obviously got a little bit too much for him. And, you know, he's probably relieved that he won and his family were there and he was doing it in front of his hometown. So, you know, he kind of got a little bit of emotional then and, you know, started crying. But yeah, it's kind of not worrying, but you're kind of like, okay, is he kind of like built for the big time? Because his performance was, you know, he's still good. He got the victory. You know, the scorecards were, you know, showed that he pretty much won every single round. But yeah, I don't know, like going forward, is he going to be like, is the huge big stage going to be too much for him? You know, like fighting at like Madison Square Garden against like an AJ or a Wilder, but you know, only time will tell. You know, maybe by then he's going to be used to it. So
yeah, there's not that many fighters. I mean, we know there's not that many fighters out there who, you know, when the lights turn on and you're in front of thousands and thousands of people, like it takes some time to adapt. There's not that many out there that can adapt from the first fight under the lights like that.
No, exactly. You know, looking at, pretty sure I couldn't do it. So, you know, he's a better man than me. But you know, since we're, you know, talking about his fight, time will tell. You know, how come? It's still, the performance still left a few questions and also some new questions.
You like
know,
what?
Going forward, footwork. He needs to work on his footwork. You know, going back in straight lines is not going to be good. You know, especially when you know someone figures it out because, you know, the commentary pointed that out, you know, very early on that he was doing that. So, you know, so I definitely think he needs to work on his footwork going forward, but he's still going to be one of the best up and coming heavyweights we've got, especially he's going to have all eyes on him because he's an American heavyweight and there's not many, you know, going forward, right? You look at what Wilder's coming towards the end. So I would imagine he's probably the next one up on the block.
And it seems like he draws pretty decent crowds in his hometown right there, too. People show up.
Ohio's just got a load of boxes, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. They should do more fights there, to be honest with you. It looks like they came out for him, looked like a good crowd, and then
got
so many. You could probably do a whole card. Top Rank could probably have enough to do a full card of Ohio guys.
Yeah, you could. Yeah, it just depends on how friendly the state taxes are to businesses, right, and stuff like that. So, because I'm not entirely sure how exactly they work over there, but yeah, no, I mean, it's Toledo. I mean, you never see any other fights in Toledo, Ohio, in Ohio in general, but on TV, it looked great. It looked like he drew a pretty decent crowd and people showed up. So, like you said, Top Rank should just, you know, I'm assuming if it's business friendly, unlike California and stuff like that, New York, that, you know, they should start utilizing Ohio, man, if people are showing up for him. You know, just like Terrence Crawford, they utilize Nebraska. Like, every time he fought Nebraska, people showed up. And when Wilder fought in Alabama, people showed up. You know, it worked out, publicity-wise. Mm. Moving on to fight previews. This upcoming Saturday, the 8th of July, from the AT&T Center in San Antonio, Texas, excuse me, on DAZN. The first, within the next 3 weekends, we're going to have excellent competitive fights, especially on July 29th with Spence Crawford. So this whole month, starting from this weekend especially, we're going to get excellent fights, even into August. So I'm excited for that. In a fight that was supposed to happen earlier this year or maybe last year or something, Virgil Ortiz Jr., 19-0, goes up against Imantas? I can never say his name. Stanionis. I'll just call him Stanionis. 14-0, but battle of undefeated fighters. This is for the WBA regular welterweight world title, I believe. I think it's a good fight, man. And I think last year I probably would have picked Ortiz, but him getting sick and pulling out of two fights, and having, you know, I think it had to do with like the weight cut or something, and that makes me nervous, man. And Stanionis can fight. I think I'm gonna have to go Stanionis on this. I think Ortiz has a lot of heart, but I don't know the whole medical issues that he's had in the last few fights and where he had to pull out and all that. It's making me nervous, man. I think his body's rejecting, in a way, him at 147. I think he's going to have to move up after this fight, regardless or if he wins or not. What do you think?
Obviously, we're peaking it, you know, a little bit early. You know, today being Wednesday, would have been good to have kind of seen him at the weigh-in. You know, like you said, with him having some trouble making weight the last two times, maybe, I think he was scheduled to fight, and then it ends up getting called off. But you know, I'm gonna stick to my original pick. I think Virgil Ortiz. I think he'll win. I think he'll just be too much, too powerful for Stanionis. Because if you look at Stanionis' record, you know, he's only had, I think he's what, 14 professional fights. But it's only really been his last few fights that you've really seen him in there with people of note. Before that, you know, you've got like Thomas Delormier. He beat him over 12 rounds, Luis Collazo, and then he was in there with Butiev. Before that, he's in with like a kind of like a whole host of people that you don't really know, the odd name here and there, like a Justin Deloach. And I think Virgil Ortiz has just got a better pedigree, you know, good amateur, done his way around a lot of different gyms, different coaches and stuff like that. And I think that's just going to pay into his favor. I think he's going to have seen more styles, more things. And then it'll be a late stoppage. I think Stanionis will be in there for a while, but when he starts to slow down and Virgil just starts to like probably go to the body, just kind of like go to the body, go to the arms, kind of like a Canelo style, just keeps hitting him all over, like chopping down a tree. I think eventually Ortiz will get to him and I think he'll stop him late.
You think, yeah, I mean, I don't know, man. I'm telling you, that medical issues that he's had the last couple of fights is, I don't think it's good. I don't think it's good. I think he's going to put it all on the line. It'll be a good fight, but.
Do you know the funny thing is, even with all of the injuries that Virgil Ortiz has had, Stanionis has actually been out the ring late longer than him.
That's insane. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, knowing that, maybe I should change my pick, but yeah, I think I'm going to lean towards Stanionis on this, but we'll see. Like you said, him being out of the being suffering from inactivity longer, obviously that's a big deal. Yeah, we'll see. Yeah, but I'm very interested in this fight. Even when they were trying to make it along like months ago or last year or something, I was very interested in the fight. And Ortiz, you know, will win some version of a world title, even though it's, you know, the regular, it's a secondary in a way, but it is a version. But what's the percentage? And I think it's 100%, but what do you think is the percentage chance that he moves up to 154 after this fight?
Well, that's a good question. I think he'll wait. I don't think he'll make an announcement straight after the fight. Like you touched on, obviously, you know, we've got the big fight between Crawford and Spence coming up on the 29th. So I think he'll wait to see what happens there, because if, say, for example, Spence wins, becomes undisputed, and then announces straight away or not long after that he's going to move up to 154, then all those belts are going to fragment. And obviously he's next in line, or they may even just promote him to be the actual full WBA world champion. And then he'll maybe move up to 154 after that, or maybe he'll, you know, try to pick up like a second belt at 147. So, yeah, I think it'll depend on what happens on July 29th between Crawford and Spence.
Yeah. Either way, it's going to be very interesting to see. But this is going to be an exciting fight, man, especially because they've both been out of the ring for a while. Ortiz is, I forgot how to pronounce it. I know it's like a long medical term.
He had rhabdo.
Is that what it was?
Rhabdomyosis. I think it was like he was cutting too much weight and then his body started to eat itself or something like that. It's like that's essentially insane. What it is.
That's like insane. But it's pretty much, I mean, I'm assuming, we obviously not official medical opinions here, but it's your body rejecting, like, hey, you're trying to lose too much weight. Like, your body's not built for this. Like, that's a way for him to, that's why I thought when it was happening, I thought, oh, yeah, there's no way he's going to fight at 147 again. But I'm surprised that he's I mean, we don't know. We're recording this on Wednesday, July 5th, 2023 today. And there hasn't been a weigh-in yet and anything. You never know. The weigh-in is in a couple days. You know, by the time people start listening to this, maybe something happened. I mean, hopefully not, but maybe he didn't make weight or something, you know. But that's your body telling you, like, hey, this is too much. So that's why I think he moves up. Yeah, I'm going 100%. I think 100% he moves up regardless after this fight. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the body's rejecting it, man. You got to listen sometimes. In the co-main event, Joseph Jojo Diaz Jr., former champion at 100. Did he have a title 135 or 130?
130.
Yeah, 130. Not at 135, though, right? It was at one. He never had one at 135. I think it was 130. Jojo Diaz Jr., 32-4-1, goes up against Jerry Perez, 14-2-1. What do you think about this fight?
I mean, it's a funny fight for us in Southern California. Obviously, you know, Jerry Perez is well known around this area. I think it's a good fight for Diaz after having a couple of, you know, big losses, I guess. You know, especially, you know, when he lost to Macito Hester. I don't think people saw that coming. You know, Jerry Perez had that recent draw, I believe, if I remember rightly.
I'm surprised they didn't put, like, Hester, like, on the card or, like, you know, he won.
For a bigger fight down the line after getting that win over Jojo, you know, it's a good name for his ledger.
Maybe they want to do a rematch, you know, have Diaz get in the winning column again and then run that back.
I mean, I think this fight has definitely been put together to get Jojo back into the win column. If he ends up losing this, then, you know, he's looking, maybe he's just had too many fights or something like that, and he's not able to go to the well again or something. You know, his body's not reacting well, but I don't see that being a problem in this fight. I think he should get a win and then hopefully he'll be back out again because he's been super busy, hasn't he? You know, he's not turning down any fights. He's saying yes to pretty much everything. And we're seeing him out on a regular basis.
And for Jerry Perez, you mentioned, you know, he's pretty decently known in the Southern California area. For our listeners who are not from Southern California, tell them who Jerry Perez is, why he's a little bit more famous down here than anywhere else.
Well, his dad's the referee, Ray Corona.
The California referee.
Well, California. Well, he just did a fight in Florida, right? Then he wasn't. What card was he on? What fight was I watching?
And then did he?
Ray popped up, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. So yeah, he's the son of Ray Corona. You know, he works with the California State Athletic Commission, but you know, they can contract these referees to go pretty much anywhere. So, yeah, it's interesting. It's really interesting to see this because you like you said, you know, I'm sure Jerry Perez knows this is a big opportunity because JoJo's former world champion. He's found a lot of big names. We'll see. And also on the card, Floyd Kid Austin Schofield, 14-0, goes up against Haskell Rhodes, 28-4-1. Schofield was actually on our show last week. We did an interview with him. We shared it again a couple times this week. So go back through if you haven't listened to his interview, go back and listen. He talks about his career, boxing, if he wants an entourage, getting messages from Oscar De La Hoya, and he thought they were fake, FaceTiming Floyd Mayweather, and Mayweather was on the bed watching some fight or watching some sport, probably betting on it or something. It was a cool interview. Yeah, it was very, very entertaining. But what do you think about this fight?
Good upcoming fight for Floyd, you know, fighting someone with literally like over double the amount of experience that he has. But yeah, Floyd's pretty game. If you listen to the interview, you can see he's, you know, very focused on his career. And I think Floyd actually manages to stop him. He's pretty heavy-handed, and I think he'll probably be in there and he'll try and steal the show, you know, especially being in Texas, him being a Texas kid. So it's going to be it should be a good fight, and it's probably one on the undercard, I would say, definitely watch.
And also this upcoming weekend from the ballroom in the Boardwalk Hall in Atlantic City, New Jersey, excuse me, on Showtime. Atlantic City getting some fights. They used to get fights all the time in the 90s and 80s. It was huge. Jerron Ennis, 30-0, goes up against Roman Villa, 26-1. What do you think about this fight?
It should be a good fight. If people remember, Roman Villa was the guy that sprung that surprise decision over Rashidi Ellis at the start of the
year. I forgot about that. That was him. Oh, wow. Yeah.
If you remember, he kind of was on there, and I think people thought Ellis was just going to go on there. I think it was his debut, right? It was his debut for PBC.
Yeah, I think it was, yeah.
Yeah. And Roman Villa, heavy-handed, 26 fights, 24 KOs, and only one loss. So this is one of those ones that I would say it's kind of like a sneaky good fight. He's got nothing to lose and everything to gain. But I just think due to the fact that he surprised Rashidi Ellis, I think that means he's not going to surprise Jerron Ennis.
Right.
I think Ennis will probably show us that he's the goods. And I think he puts on a bit of a clinic, but I think he goes the distance though. I think.
Oh, you think so?
Yeah, I think Roman Villa is a pretty game competitor, and I think he gets in there. But if you're going to put a bet on Villa.
I totally forgot until you mentioned that he's the one who beat Rashidi Ellis on. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I think you're right. It might have been Ellis's PBC debut after leaving Golden Boy. And I'm assuming PBC and Al Haymon were hoping that Ellis would win and they could put Ellis against Ennis. I think that's what they wanted, right? You would assume?
Yeah, I'd assume so. Thinking that, you know, Veer was probably just one of those guys that came in there with like, you know, what, 25 wins, 24 KOs, and it was just a load of fights over in, I think he's Colombian, over in Colombia. But then he came and, yeah, the guy could box. And he gave Ellis a really good showing that night. And Ellis obviously was devastated.
Imagine he beats Ellis, and then I mean, I think you're right. I think Ennis is he's a really good fighter. Like, you know, I think it'd be safe to put the money on him, but just imagine you get an upset and Villa beats Ennis. Like, imagine what that would do to his career.
If Villa by KO is long odds,
oh,
put some money on it because the guy can obviously punch.
$100.
The guy can obviously punch. 26 wins, 24 KOs. If he manages to catch Ennis, it could be lights out.
Oof. Yeah, you're right. It's one of those sneaky fights. You never know. It could be fight of the weekend. We got some good fights. Ortiz, Stanionis, WBA regular world title, Ennis, Villa. Yeah, that's a sneaky good fight, man. Yeah, I'm definitely more interested now that we talked about it and kind of analyzed it here. Yeah. I'm definitely interested in that fight.
Hopefully the main events are at separate times so we can watch them both.
Yeah, yeah, because I totally forgot that Villa was the one who beat Ellis. Mm. Yeah, it's 24 KOs and 26 wins. That's nuts. Moving on to news and notes section of this week's episode of The Last Round. Alexander Usyk and Daniel Dubois will reportedly headline a TNT Sports pay-per-view. TNT Sports is the new BT Sport, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now called TNT Sports. I wonder if they'll get sued by TNT over here in the United States, or I wonder how that works.
Right.
Yeah, because you would think I'm assuming they're going to run into something. I mean, I don't know how exactly it works unless they stay in areas in the UK that the laws don't apply. I don't know how exactly it works. But like I said, BT Sport is now TNT Sports, and this is a pay-per-view event. Boxing Scene reported that the fight is set for August 26th. At the Stadion Wrocław Arena. I don't know. It's in Poland. The event will be the first boxing pay-per-view under TNT Sports, like I mentioned, which is the new brand name for BT Sport, which is due to go live July 18th in the UK. Let me ask you this. What do you think about the brand change? I mean, BT Sport has been around for a long time and, you know, has name recognition. And they combine with somebody, right? And they changed the name or what happened?
Was it bought out by like the owner of like Eurosport or something?
Was it?
I can't remember. It was bought out by like a bigger company. I can't for the life of me remember right now.
What do you think about the name change?
Yeah, I'm surprised. I don't know why they didn't just leave it the same.
Yeah.
I'm guessing there must be something. Maybe they're merging with an existing channel or something like that. That's maybe why they've done it. I thought they could have just bought it and left it at the same. But yeah, there must be some method behind the madness. Maybe it's just a whole rebrand or something. They're going to come at it from a completely different look.
TNT Sports, like I do wonder if they're going to get some legal action from Warner Media over here in the United States, which owns like HBO, TBS, TNT. I do wonder, like, remember when Canelo fought? I forgot who he fought, but randomly in the advertisement in the ring and then like some other places on the event, it was like that Blue Moon Entertainment or something like that. Remember that?
Yeah.
And then they were all excited because they paid for like, they had all the advertisements on a big Canelo card. And then like within like a month, they had to change their name because they got sued or somebody said like, hey, you got, that's, we have that name already. Yeah. And they had to change their name. And they changed it to, I don't know if they changed it to like Blue Moon Entertainment or are they vice versa. Do you remember?
You know, you're right. It was Blue Moon in the ring and then they changed it to like not fight sports. It's, if they follow us, it's fight something. I can't remember.
I feel like, and you don't hear that, and you don't hear about that anymore anyways. Like, you know, and how much money did they pay for that Canelo advertisement? And it's just, it didn't pan out. Do you think that this might happen with TNT Sports?
I don't think so, because I think it's a major. It's, they're already like a huge channel.
It's like unless they had, there's any ownership from Warner Media, which owns HBO, TNT, TBS over here in the United States, and all that. And like, if they're a part of it, then maybe.
Yeah, it is. They're owned by Warner Brothers Discovery.
Oh, so that's why they're called TNT Sports. Yeah. Oh, okay. Because I was wondering, I was like, there's no way they would call themselves that and not like expect a lawsuit. Okay, so Warner Brothers, that's who owns HBO, TNT, and TBS. Oh, okay, that totally makes sense now. So they're in the clear, TNT Sports. Oh, okay. Yeah, because I was wondering, I was like, this name is going to change if they're not. I didn't know Warner Media and Warner Brothers was involved. So that totally makes sense now. That totally makes sense. But what do you think, you know, just give me a quick reaction to Dubois Usyk. I mean, I think Usyk is going to outbox him easily, but yeah. Usyk's just trying to stay active because the heavyweight division is just a total shit show right now.
Yeah, he's just going to use his legs, kind of like what Savannah Marshall should have done against Francois Cruz Dizern, really. Just keep it boxing, box him long. Daniel Dubois is kind of a little bit heavy-footed, a little bit slow. Kind of relies on his power a lot because he's, you know, pretty big, strong, muscular guy. So I think Usyk may even come in slightly lighter than normal, something like that, and kind of just use his feet and he'd probably just box him for a kind of like a little bit of a boring 12 rounds or maybe similar to the performance he did against like AJ where, you know, he could maybe take him out in the last couple of rounds. It's not the fight we wanted, right? You know, it's essentially when everybody's looking at it, we're like, this really should be Tyson Fury.
Right. Yeah. But it is what it is. I think I saw a tweet that said that like the top 20 or I don't know how many in the rankings, I think on BoxRec or somewhere of all heavyweights, like don't have any fights scheduled or something. I don't know. I saw it a couple weeks ago, but like, I was like, man, that's insane. Or haven't fought in like a year and a half or so. I don't know. It was something. It was a crazy stat. I was like, that's insane. And also, ESPN is reporting that welterweights Yordanis Ugas and Keith Thurman are in talks to square off sometime in August. Thurman also confirmed it on Showtime, I believe, on a Showtime podcast or something like that. And then Ugas, who hasn't fought since April last year, when he lost to Errol Spence, and Spence just, you know, messed up his eye. He's just fought twice since 2020. Big in activity, like it is with a lot of PBC guys. Thurman hasn't fought, you know, ever since, you know, Thurman in the 2016, 2015, 2017, we thought he was going to be the guy, but, you know, slowed down a lot, injuries. And I think he just, you know, make a lot of money. You kind of just slow it down. He has he's fought one time since his loss in 2019 to Manny Pacquiao, when he beat Mario Barrios in February 2022. So seeing him fight again, let's just say in August next month, we probably won't see him for like another 2.5 years, if anything. You know, maybe he retires. He's like, yeah, I'm over it. I mean, it is what it is. But I mean, Ugas Thurman, I'm for it. Why not? They're both kind of like at a, would you say they're both kind of like at a crossroads or no? Or no?
Thurman, definitely. Thurman, I would imagine, is on one of his last paydays, I would imagine. Interesting fight, so interesting clash of styles, you know, especially with Ugas. Ugas is one of those guys that can spring a surprise if you go back to, you know, when he fought Sean Porter. You know, Sean Porter got the nod that night, but it was should have really have been Ugas. Ugas then goes and fights and beats Manny Pacquiao, right, if my member serves me correctly. So he's kind of one of those guys that kind of goes under the radar because he, you know, he pulls off some good wins, but then kind of just disappears. He's not huge on social media or anything like that. So interesting fight, but yeah, I think, you know, Thurman's pretty close to the end. Has to be pretty close to the end.
And then I wanted to get your reaction on, you know, Ryan Garcia going, him and his spat with his promoter, Golden Boy. Bernard Hopkins, who's, you know, with Golden Boy, he's been there with Golden Boy. I think he's like co-founder or something like that. Was on, a show or a podcast on YouTube or something where he said, he described Ryan Garcia as like a whiner, a whining boy. And he, I think B-Hop said something that Ryan was blaming everybody that you can blame. Like I said, he called him whining, like a whiner or something like that. Well, Ryan Garcia responded to that and said, I don't remember ever making an excuse for my loss. I just said that parts of my team showed they didn't have loyalty. That has nothing to do with a fight, only with integrity. B-Hop trying to help Oscar. I never seen an attack on someone's own fighter by a promoter ever. Well, that last sentence, you can just go to Bob, type in Bob Arum and on YouTube, and you can see Bob Arum going after a lot of his fighters over the years. He did it. He's been doing it to Crawford. That's why they're in the lawsuit. He did it to Mikey Garcia. He did it to De La Hoya. So that last sentence, easily. But I mean, what do you think about this? Because there's people responding that like, oh yeah, you know, Ryan's actually right, that Ryan's like, he never made an excuse. But the kid, after the fight, he was saying that the rehydration clause made him weak. Isn't that an excuse? And then he also said he had a rib injury prior to the fight that he got during camp. That no, that and it, there's, I think there's a video on the All Access where who's his coach? Who did he just fire? Joe Goosen asked him, he's like, oh, did he hit you in the rib? And he's like, yeah. I mean, aren't those excuses? You know, like, I don't know. I just don't understand, man. Like, Ryan definitely needs a PR person, but I just think he's just one of those fighters that just, and there's a lot of fighters out there, you know, there's a lot of fighters out there like that. They just, especially the younger ones growing up in the social age like this, they just can't help but, you know, respond. But you need, you know, what if be somebody like Leo Santa Cruz? When do you ever see Leo Santa Cruz post about anything? If he does post about something, it's literally like he's promoting something or like it's all basic stuff. You never hear about him. You never hear about him, you know? It's like he's never responding to anybody. What do you think about it? Because Ryan's trying to, you know, obviously build sympathy, and then one of his own promoters, Bernard Hopkins, is calling him a whiner. and saying that he was placing blame on something. And then Ryan obviously saw that and got upset and tried to say, like, I don't know, he's just defending Oscar. And he's like, I've never seen a promoter do this to one of their fighters. Well, that's easily, you know, that's easily unproven, or proven against, or whatever, how you want to say it. I mean, what a shit show, man. What the whole situation with him and Golden Boy and him, it sucks. But supposedly, like we said before, Golden Boy has him on contract until probably 2026, according to stuff, reports that we read. Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know what the situation is here. I mean, what's your reaction to that? Ryan Garcia responding to Bernard Hopkins calling him a whiner.
I mean, I think we're more old school, right? You know, that sort of stuff should be kept, you know, behind closed doors. You know, Ryan was going into the fight saying, like, you know, there was no excuses, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like, he agreed to it. And then as soon as he loses, he...
Yeah. Then he says there was a mole. Then he says that there was a mole in his camp. And it's like, yeah, you were going in saying you weren't going to make any excuses. You wanted to accept everything, rehydration class and stuff. And then after, you start making excuses. So, like, who's... And then you fired your coach. you're training with Eddie Reynoso and Canelo Alvarez, arguably the best gym in the world, with the best fighter in the world, the most profitable fighter in the world. And then you leave them and you start talking trash about them. Talking trash about Canelo. And then you go to Joe Goosen. And then as soon as you lose, you fire him. It's like, what the hell is going on, man? Like, I don't know. I don't know. That's a tough situation, man. And I think Golden Boy, and like you said, they should have been handled behind closed doors. It should have been. But I think De La Hoya De La Hoya in general, it's his company. He was just sick of seeing Ryan Garcia post online and attacking him and his team and attacking, making the Golden Boy look stupid. So De La Hoya just kind of gave him a taste of his own medicine. And now they're all doing it. B-Hop's joined the train. It's like, man, now, and there's a lawsuit. That's what I don't understand, man. I really do not understand how this is going to work out. I can't wait for the next fight for Ryan Garcia when the Golden Boy staff's right there. Like, what is he going to say? Like, nah, you guys need to go over there. Like, it's like a drama. It's like a drama on TNT. I don't know. Where do you think this ends? What do you think?
I mean, I don't know. You know, it's going to be interesting in it to see what the lawyers can do. Are they going to come up with some type of loophole or something like that, which ends up, you know, him getting out of Golden Boy, or is he going to just buy his way out of Golden Boy and end up with, you know, PBC at some point in the future? I'm sure Oscar's not going to want that. Bernard's not going to want that, because as much drama as he causes, you know, I think he obviously does views. You know, just look at Gervonta Davis against Ryan Garcia, the amount of pay-per-views that they've done. And I'm sure they want to get some of the money back, because I'm sure they probably took a bit of a loss on some of the fights coming up with the amount of money they were paying Ryan. So now's the time that they really get to recuperate all of the money that they've thrown at him before he was the star that he is now. So it's going to be interesting.
Yeah. It's going to be insane, man. Yeah. We'll see. We will see. But once again, guys, thank you again for listening to this week's episode of the Last Round Podcast. Sorry, it was a little late. It was a holiday here in the United States, the 4th of July, Independence Day, America's birthday, if you want to call it like that. So we were a little late in recording and putting this out. But like I mentioned, thank you again for listening. And as we cross the finish lines for this week's episode, Mike, go ahead and let them know where they can find us and follow us.
We are at The Last Round 12 on Instagram and Twitter. And be sure to join us next week. We'll be reviewing that big Jaron Ennis Ramon Villa fight, which could go any way.
Yeah, and Ortiz Stanionis. We have sneaky good fights this weekend. I'm excited. For the hardcore boxing fans, got some sneaky good fights. So for once again, for my co-host Michael Shepherd, I'm Danny Z. This is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is The Last Round Podcast.